Good morning. It's 10 a.m. on May 9th, and you're listening to Queries, a conversation about gender and labeling, or choosing not to. It's really up to you. My name is Zoe Osborne. I use they, them pronouns, and I identify as non-binary. I'm going to start off with a song today rather than music. We'll go into news later, but I just want to allow some time for people to start trickling in. So today's music selection is almost entirely from a queer artist that I just found, and I just have been really enjoying her music. She identifies, she's just as a queer person of color, and her name is Joy Oladokun. So I would like to play some, every single song selection from today is from her. So please enjoy the first song of hers, which is Breathe Again.
The devil's in the basement in my home. A flight of stairs is way too close. He comes for me when I'm alone, collecting debts that I don't owe. Follow me down where the waters run deep. I'll let you drown in the worst of me. If my intentions are good, why can't I come clean? Heaven's above, where does that leave me? Am I looking for revival? Am I dressed in other sin? Hold my breath till I'm honest. Will I ever breathe again? When the world's so heavy I can't stand, I close my eyes and start again. Though my heart is in my head, I won't break, give me faith to bend.
Okay, for those of you just joining in, that was Breathe Again by Joy Alatico. Today, all of our music selections will be from her. I've just been enjoying her music. She's a queer person of color and just has some pretty, she just writes some pretty soulful music that I've been enjoying. So let's jump into today's news. First of all, I'd like to wish everybody listening a happy Mother's Day. That's kind of going to be the through line for today's episode. I want to talk kind of about motherhood in the context of queerness and the expectations we have of mothers, both of those in cisgendered and straight and heteronormative relationships, and those that are either outside of the binary or outside of the kind of heteronormative ideal of what motherhood should be. So that's coming up a little bit later, but I'm going to get into some news. So the first piece of news that I saw I'm going to start out with kind of good news, which is that in the UK, a court just ruled that parents can consent to their child, any child under 16 getting puberty blockers as a treatment for gender dysphoria. And without applying for court approval, up until this point, they pretty much needed to go through a whole system of courts and appeals in order to receive hormone therapy if they wanted to. This is also following a December ruling, which said that kids under 16 could only consent to having puberty blockers if they, quote, understood the nature of the treatment. And it's a little bit of a tricky issue because of course treatment should be if it is a life-saving treatment, it blurs the line of whether or not you truly need to understand the full ramifications of the treatment to receive it, especially when it's life-saving and reversible like puberty blockers. But this court case that was challenging this ruling was actually brought on by someone who had detransitioned and was arguing that when they were first transitioning, they did not understand the full scope of what that meant and therefore had to underwent all of these procedures and gender-affirming care only to realize that that wasn't for them in the end. So it's overall a victory that parents in the UK can they can do this, they can consent to their kid getting puberty blockers without court appeal, but it's still kind of very much in the air in terms of whether or not the kids can consent individually to treatment. Which would be very important for kids who don't have parental approval, which is we see in a wide variety of cases. And in the United States, we're acting in pretty much the exact opposite way, which is this week, the Montana governor, Greg Gianforte, signed the, quote, Safe Women's Sports Act, or it's procedurally called House Bill 112, which bans trans females from competing in their sport of choice, which is, even though there is, like, doctors and people who, and, like, I think even the governor of Virginia, when asked, could not name a single time in which a trans female received a advantage in a sport, in competing in their sport of choice. So there's very little basis to, like, actual information to back up these claims that trans women are getting advantages in women's sports, but so it's pretty, these kind of bills are unfounded, but another one has been passed. Additionally, on the same day, he passed Senate Bill 99, which, quote, it states that public school students don't have to attend sex education classes or any class dealing with, quote, human sexuality issues unless their parents opt them into the course. It does not define human sexuality issues, and the law could be used to target any curriculum regarding LGBTQ people. And this is according to the Human Rights Campaign. So it's pretty much a attack on all fronts to decrease education about LGBTQ issues and also exclude LGBTQ kids from doing the sports of their choice. And the next news item is, as of Friday, 2021 had seen a record of anti-LGBTQ plus bills signed into law, with 17. The previous record was 15, which was set in 2015. The 17 bills include several trans-exclusionary sports bills, 4 religious refusal bills, 2 setting anti-LGBTQ plus education policy, 1 banning gender-affirming care for trans minors, 1 making it more difficult for trans people to change their gender on their birth certificates, 1 hate crimes bill that the HRC calls a sham, and 1 allowing school sponsors clubs to discriminate. More than 250 anti-LGBTQ plus bills have been introduced in state legislatures this year. About half of them were specifically anti-trans. 11 anti-LGBTQ plus bills are on governor's desk awaiting signature or veto, and several more are continuing to move through state legislatures across the country. So there's a systemic attack right now in state legislatures on the rights of trans youth and trans healthcare. So I know Texas is currently in the battling to currently debating. There are the bill that excludes trans kids, both the bill that excludes trans kids from sports and one that is that makes healthcare for trans youth more difficult to attain. They're currently being debated, and so please reach out to your representatives and make sure that they urge the governor not to sign these or not to vote on them, because they're truly everywhere. It's quite appalling. And so the last piece of news is, I apologize, is no more cheery than the last few, but this month we've had several other cases of trans and gender nonconforming people being murdered across the country. Within the last month, there have been 2 people in Texas and 1 person in Boston. Tiffany Thomas, who was killed in a car wash in Dallas on April 24th. Their identity is not known in terms of gender and sexuality. However, the name Tiffany Thomas is what's commonly used, and they've been dead named many times by other newspapers in their obituaries. So gender and sexuality and trans violence has not been ruled out as a cause of death. As a cause for this attack to have happened. Iris Santos was shot while eating lunch in Houston. In this case as well, anti-trans violence has not been ruled out. And Jahira de Alto Balenciaga was stabbed to death. She was a prominent activist and mother figure in the local ballroom drag scene in Boston. And she was providing sanctuary for people who were who were trying to save themselves from domestic violence and was killed as a result of that. And so we have to make sure that we bring visibility to these cases and make sure that we protect those who, the most vulnerable communities. In many of those cases, vulnerable communities include people at the intersection of gender violence, racial violence, and transgender violence. So these women of color should be protected, and we should continue to remember them and provide publicity to try to get this from get more visibility on this issue. So I'm going to go into today's main topic, but I'm going to play a song first just to kind of relax the mood a little bit. So I want to play another song by Joy Ladakun, which is called Sorry Isn't Good Enough. So please enjoy and continue to tune in for the rest of the hour on Midwave Radio. Thank you.
she turned away. I guess we're back to this. I don't get your shine, just get your shade. Started with my shoulders. They've been hanging low, I hit the ground. Try my best to keep composure, but my blood is boiling over. Don't care what you have to say, that you think it's okay, that your words have fixed me. Sorry isn't good enough, my sorry isn't good enough. Fuck you and your twisted games, now you've broken everything. Say this time you've changed, but sorry isn't good enough, sorry isn't good enough. Ending with my fingers running down your face to catch your teeth, but this time I mean it. Stop your begging and your pleading, 'cause I know you regret it. But now it's just too late for words. Nothing you can say to mend it, nothing new will stop the hurt. Don't care what you have to say, that you think it's okay, that your words have fixed me. Sorry isn't good enough, I'm sorry.
Okay, that was Sorry Isn't Good Enough by Joy Ladekun. So, today, since it's Mother's Day, I wanted to just reflect a little bit on what motherhood is for people who don't necessarily identify as female, and what that role entails, and what and just kind of how it's ingrained in our view of what of what femininity is in society. So, recently, I'm in a social class, sociology class right now, about constructing groups, and I had to do a presentation about gender. Go figure. Anyways, I was reading a piece by a foundational gender theorist named Judith Lorber, and she was talking about kind of she believes that. Like, yes, human bodies differ in many ways physiologically, but they are completely transformed by the social practices to fit into the categories that are deemed by society. And those main categories, the most pervasive ones, are male and female. And we have a series, the responsibilities that we, these roles are mostly distributed in order to have a division of labor and have a division of power, and this social labor division is partially in terms of the including the responsibility of rearing children and kinship roles. So I wanted to kind of present this a little bit as because I'm gaining more of an understanding of what gender as a social construct means through reading this and talk about motherhood and what this perception of femininity is in terms of motherhood. So Judith Lorber presents several different components of what gender means. This includes gender statuses, gendered division of labor, gendered kinship, gendered sexual scripts, gendered personalities, gendered social control, gender ideology, and gender imagery. And those are as a social institution. So those components, when viewed as a social institution, are basically things that individuals, ways that individuals bring, no, the way that, sorry, it's the way that society reinforces gender roles, and which ultimately leads to the production of more gendered ideology, as well as kind of traps people into a roles that allow them to fit into what the power dynamics of the society is at that moment. So what I wanted to talk about in terms of gender as a social institution would be the category of gender division of labor, which Lorberg qualifies as being the assignment of productive and domestic work to members of different gender statuses, gendered kinship, which is the roles and rights of individuals within a family unit, and then gendered sexual scripts, which are the normative patterns of sexual desire and sexual behavior depending on gender statuses. And the reason why I wanted to look at these was because they are, if we change the way, like, if Lorberg mentions that if you change individual components of how we build gender, then the system eventually starts crumbling down. So if we change these roles of in motherhood, if we change what it means to have a specific kinship tie in gender, then are we going to change gender roles entirely? So how does the specific role of what motherhood is, like, how does that play into the way that we view women in their entirety? And it also brings up an interesting intersection of what, Lorberg uses a lot of terms that are synonymous with sexuality to describe individual gender performance. So in terms of individual gender, one of the points that she brings up that is required is the gendered marital and procreative status, and then as well as gendered sexual orientation, as a matter of if you have to fulfill certain roles of marital and procreative status and specific gender orientation, I mean sexual orientation, in order to be deemed as feminine in our society. And that has led to a lot, the kind of treatment of feminine motherhood as being, like, femininity as being synonymous with being good at being a mother. So, the more you fit into this paternalistic, heteronormative, ultra-feminine view of what a mother should be, the better a mother you are, regardless of what, you know, like, what your actual behavior or personality is. So, and you might ask, like, what does this necessarily have to do with queerness? And so I want to talk about, or kind of begin to the process of questioning what it means to have, I mean, if you take away that aspect of femininity, or you introduce additional femininity, then how can we evolve the term mother to have all the positive connotations of motherhood that we know and love, but that is also inclusive of people who do not necessarily fit those ideals of femininity. So I want to move on to the next section, which is kind of talking more about this. But before I do that, I'm going to play another song, which is by Joy Aladokun again. I don't know why I keep on repeating the name of the artist, given that I'm going to be using her music for this entire show. I guess I'm just not quite used to that. Anyways, and this song is called Look Up. So please enjoy.
Sometimes your life feels like a broken roller coaster, a thousand useless moving parts. Sometimes you spend your night too scared of getting closer, hiding out in the backseat of your car. You tell yourself it's raining, the clouds are in your head. You tell yourself it's better to jump before you fall again, before you lose it all again. Look up, do you see the sunlight? Look up, there's flowers in your head. Hold on, 'cause somebody loves you. You know trouble's always gonna be there. Don't let it bring you to your knees. Look up. Mondays aren't always bright. Some days you lose the fight, but life can be beautiful if you let it be. Tomorrow keeps taunting you with all kinds of mystery. It's a blank page for your poetry if you let it be. So don't tell yourself it's raining, the clouds are in your head. You tell yourself it's better to jump before you fall again, before you lose it all again. Look up, do you see the sunlight? Look up, there's flowers in your head. Hold on, there's somebody loves you. You know trouble's always gonna be there. Don't let it bring you to your knees, yeah. Look up. Look up. Hold on. Look up. Sometimes your life feels like a broken roller coaster, thousand useless moving parts. Look up, do you see the sunlight? Look up, there's flowers in your head. Hold on, 'cause somebody loves you. You know trouble's always gonna be there. Don't let it bring you to your knees, yeah. Look up. Trouble's always gonna be there. Look up. Don't let it bring you to your knees. Look up.
Okay, that was Look Up by Joy Ladekun. So, I want to continue this kind of train of thought, which is the by making just motherhood and choice of becoming a part of like a family or kinship role is synonymous with the validity of one's gender. It brings up a lot of questions of just like, are queer women who are who choose not to have children less feminine, or are NB folk feminine because they've had become more feminine if they have the mannerisms of the gender that they were raised into? Do you then become socially the gender a different gender when people view you as such? It brings up many questions. But I was the most of the material that I found on this matter was actually in regard to deconstructing our current view of motherhood in terms of same-sex relationships between women, because right now, our perception of motherhood is very much it's a singular, feminine, hyper feminine figure within life that has you have a unique kinship bond, and that really doesn't. That's pretty much entirely applicable to a heteronormative relationship, whereas there are many cases in which a same-sex couple. They have two mothers, one of which has a direct biological connection because they were the ones who gave birth, but that doesn't mean that the other is no less a mother. People who choose to adopt, one is no less a mother because they're not biologically related, they're not technically a bio mother. So what I was reading on this, I was reading a book called Queering Motherhood, which is, and in which they mentioned that we need to first understand kind of our current view of what motherhood is. And right now there's an overarching view of motherhood as being biological and being the epitome of what feminine expectations are. And it brings up this idea of monomaternalism. And about this, Shelley, who's the author of the book I just mentioned, says that all too often claims about real mothers equate maternal reality with participation in a particular set of biological processes such as pregnancy, birthing, and lactation. Because of participation in these biological processes, a mother is frequently thought to possess a special bond with a child, such that loving and caring for that child is natural, a matter of maternal instinct. And I think you can get a little bit lost in talking in this argument against kind of the biological connection between mother and child. I think there definitely is some component of a natural maternal bond, whether that be through just kind of socialization. Mother and child spend a lot of time together for a very long time, or the mere hormones of a child rearing. The argument here is that hormonal response and that socialization is not necessarily what is the essence. The biological component is not the essence of what motherhood is. And so the problem with monomaternalism, though, is that it places undue emphasis on this maternal bond, and it actually and Shelley says again on this matter that convinced of biological essentialism, the romanticization of biological mother-child bond shapes one's phenomenological experiences of biological motherhood. Those experiences then become proof of the essentialist hypothesis, making it a difficult hypothesis to dislodge. Now, reading over that again, it probably is not the best thing to read on a podcast, given that it's quite complicated. But in essence, it says that this kind of idea of a maternal bond is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, and that if we continue to romanticize it, then it will in turn become more deemed more of an essence of what motherhood is, and it will make it even more difficult to dislodge as an ideal. And the issue with this is essentially that it is an exclusionary practice that excludes queer folk from being, from playing the role of mother, in essence. And on this again, Shelley says that she provides both definitions and a series of explanations for why monomaternalism is bad, especially when looking in the context of queer folk. So, monomaternalism, as an ideological doctrine, resides at the intersection of patriarchy, with its insistence that women bear responsibility for biological and social reproduction, heteronormativity, and its insistence that women must pair with a man rather than other women in order to raise children successfully, capitalism, in which its conception of children as private property, and Eurocentrism, in its erasure of polymaternalism in other cultures and historical periods. Monomaternalism is normative in the contemporary industrialized world, as well as some post-colonial cultures that have adopted these contemporary Eurocentric values. Indeed, the assumption is so taken for granted that it has received slight attention even from feminist theorists. Here, Shelley highlights the negative consequences of monomaternal policies and practices for women and children, and to suggest ways in which adoptive, blended, lesbian, and other queer families can be sites of resistance to monomaternalism. So, Shelley then lists some of the issues in viewing monomaternalism in this kind of typically feminine way, which include competition among women for maternal status, the erasure of many women's childbearing and childrearing labors, the treatment of children as private property, the separation of children from mothers and mothers from children, the maternal grief and guilt often suffered by those who relinquish custody of their children and those who come to bear full responsibility for them, a lack of attention to the ways in which women might and sometimes do mother cooperatively, and a lack of imagination concerning ways in which laws, policies, and practices could be transformed better to serve both women and children. And not only does this kind of, this, like, play into, like, work against queer folk in terms of depictions of mothers and motherhood and cause all these issues, but if we kind of quickly revisit what Lorber says, then this kind of view of femininity through motherhood, if we treat it as kind of this socially constructed role, then it actually leads to the it even feeds in further to this kind of systemic structure that puts down women and queer folk and creates a stratified power structure and continues to continues to be sexist and patriarchal. So, I know that is quite a lot to get through, and it's mostly just me mulling over my own personal ideas on the topic, but just to kind of recap where we are at this point, just for the sake of ease of understanding, we have these views of what women and men should be doing in society, and that direct view of what women should do has kind of led to traditional roles of motherhood for us. And the method of motherhood that we have developed is works pretty much only in a context of heteronormativity. And so people who are deemed to be less feminine or more feminine are thus worse mothers, and those who choose not to be or people who, like, you gain motherhood at the and femininity at the same time, but if you're less feminine, then you're deemed to be less of a good mother. And this is an exclusionary practice for adoptive parents, lesbian parents, transgender parents, intergenerational parents, extended and blended families, and polyamorous families. So I want to go into how we can recontextualize the way we talk about motherhood to queerness. But I'm gonna just allow myself to get a breath of air and everybody just to process that a little bit with another song. So this next song is by the same artist, and it's called "I See America." It's quite touching, and please enjoy.
I saw God out on the block today. He was darker than the preachers say, with a teardrop tattooed on his face and dirt in his fingers. I heard angels when he laughed away, the people do when they have known true pain. For his sins I don't know who to blame. What choice was he given in this world that we live in? When I see you, I see light, I see America.
Okay, that was I See America by Joy Ladigan. So I want to talk more about what it means to restructure our perception of familial and kinship roles to queerness. So the text that I've been referring to, which is by Shelley, is specific to their own personal life in which they are in a blended and same-sex household. And mostly juggles with how we can view contexts in which there are multiple mothers. So I first kind of want to provide that as a hypothetical and talk about that, and then I also want to explore a little bit what motherhood looks like for non-binary people, or kind of what fills that role in a household that has non-binary people in it. So, the question is, if in a relationship between two women and if there are kids, then who is the mother? And we've already mentioned earlier that there's this issue with kind of treating mother as a purely biological term, because it's just kind of an essentialization of what that role is. So the answer is they both play the mother. They're two women who are mothering, so they are both mothers, regardless of biological kinship roles. However, but that doesn't necessarily fit into the frame of how we view motherhood in our society. So instead, Shelley recommends that we reframe queerness as a practice of intimacy. And to explain that, I want to read a little bit of a section from this book. So she says, quote, "In situating polymaternal families as potentially queer communities of kinship, I wish to explore the relationships between the queer and the intimate from a different angle. What if, instead of domesticating the queer by cloaking it in the rhetoric of intimacy, we were to make intimacy strange by revealing it to be, at least sometimes, queer? My claim here is that polymaternal families, like polyamorous relationships, might queer intimacy in both its psychological and material dimensions. Psychologically, such families minimally triangulate the mother-child relationship, thus propelling us away from a romanticized version of mother-child love as a didactic relationship of mutual recognition. materially polymaternal families queer intimacy by destabilizing the domestic space and time in which intimacy is lived, thus propelling us away from the notion of home as a safe haven from the challenges of public life. And so it doesn't necessarily seem like, from the way that she's describing it here, it does not necessarily seem like an obviously good idea, a good thing to propel ourselves from this kind of sense of normalcy that we have. But in families in which you already do not fit into this kind of ideal of a nuclear family, then this does seem like a better alternative. What I haven't necessarily mentioned yet is this greater debate that has been going on for a very long time, which is the kind of development of a quasi heteronormative relationship between a same-sex couple. So rather than moving queering the family in the way that Shelley is mentioning, some choose just to they alter their relationship to more directly reflect what they see around them. So this kind of the most obvious and common view of this is like a same-sex lesbian relationship in which one person in terms of one person deciding that they want to present more in a masculine terms and the other in more feminine terms, ultimately just living out a kind of heteronormative relationship even as they are fighting against it just by their mere existence. So she presents the reframing of queerness as a practice of intimacy, and she also presents this in this way because she wants to change the perception of family unit from necessarily being centered around the child to being centered around a perception of mothers, because in our view of motherhood, there is an inherent kind of animosity, pitting of women against each other. And it's kind of, I wasn't necessarily aware of this phenomenon, but I'll again read another quote from her, in which he says, quote, "In understanding why accounts of motherhood so rarely focus on the relationship between mothers, Eve Sedgwick's analysis of male homoeroticism is instructive. In Between Men, Sedgwick argues that male homoerotic relationships are typically configured as relationships of rivalry that are triangulated around a woman. Much of our culture insists on framing male-male desire as male rivalry triangulated around a woman, thus reframing queer desire as heterosexual desire. We frequently render female-female desire intelligible by triangulating it around a child, thus reframing queer desire as reproductive desire. For example, we assume that a daughter cannot truly understand her mother until she becomes a mother herself. We assume that all mothers have an empathetic bond by virtue of their relationship with children, and perhaps that all women share a common bond by virtue of their mere reproductive potential. In cases of polymaternal families, moreover, female bonding over children is frequently signified, like male homoeroticism, as a site of rivalry. Grandmothers are viewed as interfering in a new mother-child relationship. Adoptive mothers are fearful that a child's birth mother will return to reclaim their child. Stepmothers are depicted as intruding on biological mother's territory. Much as both men and women are oppressed by a cultural system wherein male-male desire becomes unintelligible by routing it through putative male desire for a woman, both women and children are harmed by a cultural system wherein relationships between women are rendered intelligible by routing female-female desire through putative desire for a child." So, I think that's somewhat, she does very well in explaining why in the idea, the current view of polymaternal relationships can prove to be problematic, especially. And so instead of viewing this, like, female-female relationships as being centered around something other than just pure intimacy and desire for each other, she proposes that to queer mothering is, in one sense, to understand lesbian mothering as a prototype for other forms of mothering, rather than viewing it as odd or a deviant form of mothering. So, like in many basically, if you were to essentialize this entire point, it's in, like, like in many other things, we should, we just need to normalize relationships between people, and direct relationships around people, instead of trying to triangulate relationships as being contingent on something else, or having a single, like a single mother in a relationship, in order to create a society which is more inclusive of any member of the LGBT community, you basically just need to normalize relationships and make it seem as if it's not a kind of deviant, odd form of mothering, or that it's kind of a with that comes kind of a anti-demonization of women in general. So again, it's very much an intersection between sexism, homophobia, and transphobia, but it is an interesting way of viewing the world. We are in our final 10 minutes of the show. I did not think that I was going to be talking for this long, because I don't know, I've just been... I did not think it was going to go on this long, so I'm going to play another song, take a few sips of water, and then kind of bring some more open-ended questions about what this means for other types of queerness. So please continue to tune in. It's the same artist, and this song is called Mercy, and it also features Tim Gent.
From home, I work a lot on the down low. I keep trying to be somebody, somebody that they all know. I double check my phone, no new messages, no missed calls. Everybody needs somebody to hold them too close. I need a little mercy, mercy. I need a little mercy, mercy. I don't wanna talk to God, I just wanna smoke weed. Mercy, mercy. Devil's not in the details, he's on the front page. We be selling souls for some retail, maxing our minimum wage. And I keep trying to take my money to the grave. Somebody's gonna make my money someday. I need a little mercy, mercy. I need a little mercy, mercy. I don't wanna talk to God, I just wanna smoke weed. Mercy, mercy.
Look, hey, mercy, mercy, no mercy, Alago. It's a Nissan low on gas. Thank God for every time he saved my ass. Like back when we was on the internet, but we never cop nothing. Listening to Kanye West before we missed the old Kanye West. Before we ever sip Coronas or Corona ever had us stress. Before we turned from God cause we couldn't face our sins. Before we ever really understood what that is. Honestly, I wonder if we ever will. I seen Kobe go so unexpected. Wonder where his riches would've went if he ain't have a will. Yeah, look, moral of the story, we ain't kids no more. Yeah, moral of the story, you can't take it with you. Yeah, moral of the story, everybody needs something or somebody. Everybody needs a little mercy.
Mercy. I don't wanna talk to God, I just wanna smoke weed. Mercy, mercy, I need a little mercy. Mercy, I need a little mercy. Mercy, I don't wanna talk to God, I just wanna smoke weed. Mercy, mercy.
Okay, that was Mercy featuring Tim Gent by Joy Eladokun. So we're in the home stretch of today's show. We're in the final 4 minutes. And I kind of, more than just providing information, I just kind of want to kind of start more of a conversation or more of a train of thought about what motherhood means for people who do not identify as women. And I think the perception of motherhood is overwhelmingly positive, and although it is kind of a determining factor in what femininity is, it's more of just from a personal perspective, it's an ideal regardless of gender. It's an incredible thing, and mothers are absolutely wonderful. And the beauty of motherhood does not necessarily have to extend entirely to those who present in feminine manners or identify with being feminine. And so I was looking through it, and it's like there are couples in which in which people who have given birth but don't identify as female, they have a child, and they know that they want to fill the role of what a mother would do, or provide that support in which mothers are the support that mothers are typically expected to provide, but they don't identify with that, with the implications of being a mother. And there's not necessarily a term for that. Some people say, and Baba is a term for, it's kind of the non-binary equivalent of mom. However, that doesn't necessarily fit for a lot of people, given that it's actually just a direct translation of father in many languages. And also, there's the social implication of being someone who's clearly, who is like child rearing and filling the, is kind of filling a role of a mother, will frequently get misgendered as such. And therefore, the kind of filling this role of motherhood comes at the cost, it's an amazing thing, but it comes at the cost of being invalidated or being misgendered, and can actually be quite painful for the individual. So it's an interesting conundrum to have. It's just, how can we maintain the incredible implications of what motherhood is in our society without completely without invalidating others, and being inclusive of queer identities, and kind of in recontextualizing it to queerness. And so I want everybody to think about that a little bit, and I want everybody to know that anybody who is a nourisher or kind of fills the role of motherhood, happy Mother's Day, even if you are not a female, or if you don't necessarily fit the roles of what of what society deemed as motherhood. So happy Mother's Day. Please tune in for the next hour at Midwave Radio. You're listening to Queries, and up next is I Must Be Missing Something with Logan Burke and Harrison Knight. Thank you for tuning in. Have a nice Sunday.